So in our final quarter hour today, we're talking to folks from the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. Thank you for coming back again. And we have three folks who are going to talk about two different topics with us today. But let's go around the room and kind of introduce yourselves first. Jim, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Happy to be back. My name is Jim Ullman. I'm the Director of Safety and Technology for NATCA.
And I'm Amanda Richardson with Oakland Center NATCA, and I've been a controller there for 13 years.
Richard Kennington, I'm out of Portland Tower in Oregon, and I also develop all of the recurrent training that happens around the nation.
Okay, great. So wanted to talk about a couple of things with you folks today. So ADS-B, as a requirement for moving around in most controlled airspace, is only 18 months away, or less than 18
less
months
than
away. And it's been fun this week in our studio. We have a large screen and an ADS-B receiver, so we've been watching little rows of little icons all, you know, up to Ripon and then up to Oshkosh. And so it's been interesting and, you know, entertaining for us, but obviously goes a lot further. So the question I've got is, you know, we're this close and equipage is happening. How does the prevalence of ADS-B technology as it sits right now change how a controller works with and communicates with GA pilots?
Well, in my experience, we definitely can increase our interaction with a GA pilot specifically. The airspace that I work at Oakland Center is has very mountainous terrain, and we've often had to terminate flight following services from Seattle Center down south towards Reno.
Just based on workload?
Based on coverage.
Based on radar coverage?
So we can't see anybody below 14,000. That's very intermittent, and it's non-existent below 10,000. So with the additional ground stations and the coverage that we have that automatically comes in when the radar is not available, we now, as long as the flight plan shows that the aircraft is ADS-B out-equipped, we can accept that handoff and keep providing a service to the aircraft so they don't have to plan for the next frequency, call up and ask for flight following all over again. We keep them continuously. And I also work the airspace east of Yosemite. Our coverage is limited at 16,000 and below, and now we can see aircraft on the ground at Bishop.
So, Amanda, do you have just a rough idea about the percentage of aircraft that are now ADS-B equipped that you're dealing with? Is it more than half, less than half, increasing?
I'm seeing a definite increase. We have to read the flight plan to see right now if the aircraft is equipped or not. And it definitely comes more into play in the en route environment,
sure,
the center environment, when you're working with the general aviation public as opposed to the air carriers. But it is definitely increasing.
Very good. The deadline is coming, and I work for an air carrier, and we're just now actually rolling out ADS-B into our aircraft, you know, with the hopes of getting it introduced by just moving our airplanes in and out of heavy check. There's a lot of work on, you know, our end to do that. But as a GA pilot, it seems wonderful. I mean, to see the traffic targets on a display, it certainly takes a lot of the mystery out of our flying in general aviation. So I'm a big proponent of it. I'm looking forward to it.
We've been a fan in my area specifically. It's been a huge benefit.
I'm sorry, Mike.
I was going to say, so, you know, we're kind of on the way to, but not there yet. And so seems to be a little bit of you don't know what you don't know. I mean,
right.
we heard a number of stories about people who had ADS-B in their airplane, and they were kind of watching what was going on. And then somebody would appear out of nowhere, and they never saw them. And, you know, that's to be expected when you've got a whole lot of airplanes with all kinds of equipage all in one space. But is there still a little bit of, I don't know what I can't see going on with this?
Well, sure. You're not going to have perfect coverage everywhere. And ADS-B out definitely is what helps us. ADS-B in is just an added bonus for you as a pilot to increase your awareness of your surroundings and to help you with things that I can't help you with.
So we've been talking with Amanda Richardson about ADS-B. She's a controller. And we're going to switch topics now in the time we have left to another one that is kind of a hot one. And it's the idea of wrong surface operations, which is a big word category with a lot of little subdivisions in it. So, Jim, talk to us about what you're seeing there.
Well, we've seen an increase that It's, I can't even tell you the percentage. It's more and more and more, and it doesn't seem to be getting better. I think that's what really scares us. And we've been trying to work on just education, but I think it's a lot more than education. I think some of it is runway configurations. Some of it is unfamiliarity, but there are certainly some GA airports that have a large number of runway wrong surface operations. No doubt, and we're tracking that, and we're trying to make changes at the local level through education actually. While we're here this week, we're talking about wrong surface landings and the importance of really knowing that you're landing on the right runway. We have aircraft landing on taxiways on a fairly regular basis, and Richard is very well versed in exactly what's been going on in that.
I was just reading in the latest issue of FAA Safety Briefing, and they've devoted an article to wrong surface operations. And the thing that really surprised me was they estimate that 80% of them occur during the day with good visibility.
Absolutely. It really has nothing to do with that. One of the things that we notice is it is not unique to general aviation aircraft.
You know,
I think it's a student pilot, et cetera. But it's happening on professional flight decks, military flight decks. All of them are guilty of this. And so you say, well, what is the root cause? As Jim mentioned, you know, a physical layout, for example, with airports very closely aligned, with runway alignments the same, is a huge contributing factor.
You mean like parallel runways, like just down the road at Milwaukee or some of the airports?
Correct. Or airports in close proximity.
Sure.
A lot we see is somebody on a visual approach to a certain airport, but between them and their destination is another airport. And, you know, it's something we have specific phraseology in our book that we've got to advise you that there's an airport between you and your destination for that motive.
So you've mentioned landing on a taxiway instead of a runway, landing on the wrong runway. Landing at the wrong airport.
Correct. So the wrong surface operations, it's called wrong surface because it encompasses all of those. Wrong runway, departure or landing, taxiway, and obviously wrong airport. You say, well, you know, wrong airport. But last year we had nine people landed at the wrong airport. So there is something bigger to it. Human factors is obviously one of the big things. Sometimes we don't do the basics. When we taxi into position hold or onto the runway to depart, do we set that heading bug to make sure that we're doing, you know, things we've taught since day one? But we tend to drift away from standards, and that's how these sort of things happen. So it's more than just atmospheric conditions, obscuration of the runways and whatnot. It's, like you said, daytime conditions in good VFR, it's happening.
And what I'd like to go down a path which you may or may not want to entertain, but it'll be curious. There's more and more automation in our cockpits, so you would think that with more and more automated cockpits, these sorts of events would go down, but that hasn't been the case. Do you have an idea about why that may be?
Again, I think it's a human factors. How are we interacting with this new technology that's coming in? Is it putting us behind the aircraft, or are we interacting correctly with it? I think that, for example, if we look at the ATIS, all right, ATIS, that's pretty darn basic, right? When we listen to the ATIS, do we actively listen to the ATIS? I cannot tell you how many pilots have said, hey, listen, I have the current ATIS, and they give you the current squawk code. The current ATIS code. And then they'll say, and oh, by the way, we'd like runway 28 right for departure. Well, on the ATIS, 28 right is closed. So I'm wondering how actively you are listening to that. So again, it's how we interact with the equipment. More equipment, better equipment, doesn't do us very much good if we don't pay attention to the human factors and how we interact with that equipment.
Well, I've certainly seen from a flight instruction standpoint, when I'm with somebody who has a well automated aircraft, that there's a lot of time spent inside working the automation and punching the buttons and getting it set up, and not as much time looking outside. And I think, as you suggested, it is a bit of a human factors issue.
Indeed, and I think that particular piece right there leads to an expectation bias where we devote so much time putting in a certain arrival or planning on a certain runway that even though we may get something different, it's what we had on the mind, and that's what we're going to do.
So let's review here. What are the key pieces of advice that you want to give people to avoid showing up on your list of naughty children for wrong surface operations?
Well, we're going to hold a class on this tomorrow. I believe it's at 1 o'clock p.m. in Forum 8, if I'm not mistaken. But we're going to talk about this. We're going to go in depth. But with the time we have left, I would say we need to pay attention to the human factors involved, specifically expectation bias. We need to actively listen to the instructions that are given to us. And we need to avoid distractions. Distractions we often attribute to cell phones and that sort of thing. Distractions can be anything. It could be a passenger. It could be sightseeing. It could be a whole lot of things. Got to eliminate those distractions. And then I think the preparedness part, putting in the time to chart it out and know there are airports in my destination that I need to be hyper-vigilant about.
And sometimes I think just low-tech solutions are the key, too. As you said, just make sure the heading bug lines up with what the runway is, or maybe you could even write down your clearance.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
Closing comment from you, Jim Olin.
I think, you know, you can probably tie these two things together, right? I mean, now you have ADS-B, and you have now, I think, what we're seeing a little bit is GA pilots and regular pilots now maybe not looking at their new fish finder as opposed to out the window. So it'll be interesting actually to see whether this number increases or decreases and whether ADS-B is going to be part of that part of that issue.
Well, as a frequent user of the air traffic control system, I want to thank you all for doing a great job.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Jim Olman, Richard
Kennington,
and Amanda Richardson, all from the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. Thanks for coming in today.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Paul, we'll do this again tomorrow.
Let's do it.
You're
be ready.
You're listening to EAA Radio.